hits it to center field. Deep and gone! A three-run, record-tying home run for Salvador Perez.
Salvador Perez tying a Royals single-season home run record with his 48th last night in the first inning, a three-run shot, Major League leading 48th home run. Three RBIs to go with it. He's in pretty good shape to win the RBI crown. And so that was the good news last night. Got a second curtain call in as many nights. Only 10,000 fans at the game last night, which, you know, middle of the week on a Wednesday, I get that. In between the top and bottom of the second inning, however, things changed when Salvi slipped on the dugout stairs, tumbling down before needing assistance from Royals trainers into the clubhouse. He tweaked his ankle. And they hope he, it sounds like Salvi's okay, that he thinks he'll be good to go. He's just going to have to wait and see what he feels like today, whether he's a scratch today or not. Of course, all the fans are going, I think, only to see Salvi the way things are right now. Royals now 73-85 as they won last night 10-5 over the Indians. Here's Mike Matheny on Salvi's homer and the injury.
Probably the loudest of the group. Ball came off the bat, and it was, you know, we see a lot of angles from our vantage point, and you don't see that kind of angle and the ball carry like it did. It was pretty impressive to see, and obviously very exciting and capped off by how our fans responded. But he's a special hitter. I don't know how else to say it. It was right there, and still kind of getting over that, to be honest. You see that guy go down after all this just happened, and you could see how much he means to our club. I mean, it was... And I can't think of many times all season, but there was a mood in that dugout that was atypical. But yeah, the guys were concerned. I mean, you talk about a guy being the heart and soul, who he is. And so it was good to get some of the reports. Trainers kept coming back, kind of trying to keep us updated.
Royals jumped out to that 3-1 lead thanks to Salvi's three-run homer, up 5-1 after two. And then all of a sudden, it was tied after five, but three in the seventh, two in the eighth. The Royals win 10-5. Daniel Lynch struggling. Three innings, seven hits, four runs, two walks, two Ks. But once again, the bullpen pretty solid. Greg Holland gets the win. And the Royals will move on to a game tonight. Will Angel Zerpa, age 22, make his Major League debut for the Royals as their starting pitcher against the Indians? Michael Taylor, he's 30 years of age. The Royals and Michael A. Taylor have agreed to a two-year contract extension. Spanning 2022 and 2023, Taylor's guaranteed $9 million over the 2 years, $4.5 million each year with $500,000 in potential bonuses. He's had a career-high 11 outfield assists. His defensive metrics prove that Taylor has planted himself firmly in the Gold Glove conversation in center field. He leads the majors with 21 defensive runs saved, and his 14 outs above average per StatCast are tied for the majors' lead among all outfielders, and his ultimate zone rating is the best of any player regardless of any defensive position played. I didn't realize that. So that is why he got a two-year contract extension, because it's a big outfield and he's been very good in center. Only hitting .244, a little bit of pop with 12 homers. So obviously the Royals feel like they don't have anybody in place in the minors that can patrol center field, at least not for the next year or two. So this is a good stopgap measure. And he provides really good defense. And if you get Bobby Witt Jr. up here, maybe Nick Prado, MJ Melendez, and you got Salvi hitting a whole bunch of homers, and maybe if Dozier starts turning it around, Mondesi is healthy. Lots of ifs here, as you noticed. Whit Merrifield will be ready to go again next year. Lopez hitting 300. The Royals' offense can cover up Michael Taylor hitting .244 with 12 home runs because of his great defense. So it makes sense what the Royals are doing on that front. Cardinals lose last night. 17-game winning streak is snapped by the Brewers, 4-0. More on the Brewers and a crazy story about a player losing his temper. That's coming up. Plus, we'll update you on Major League Baseball standings in regards to the wild card. But first, local sports. We have locker room chats tonight, athlete of the week, and postseason assignments to talk about.
Yeah, right now we have the girls tennis and girls golf postseason assignments, and they're posted at ncksports.com if you're interested in finding all of those. Girls tennis, both our 3-2-1A schools will be competing at the Trigo Regional on October 8th and 9th. That's be next Friday and Saturday in Waukini. So that's where they're competing. Concordia and 4A's at the Beulah Regional Saturday, October 9th. And then in golf, Concordia will be at the Clay Center Regional on Monday, October 11th. Again, a full look at those postseason assignments, you can check out NCKS Sports NCAA.com. There's quite a bit of high school activity going on today as well, and I'll get to that first, and then we'll tell you about our Athlete of the Week high school schedule for today. As of now, the Beloit Cross Country Invitational scheduled for this afternoon at 3:45. Beloit, St. John's, Lakeside, Osborne, Sylvan, Lucas, Lincoln, Thunder Ridge, Smith Center, Southern Cloud, and Concordia. A lot of area teams all expected to be competing there in that one. And then high school volleyball today. Beloit is at the Rock Creek Triangular. They're in St. George. Varsity action, they'll play Rock Creek at 6 o'clock, while Wamego at 7. You can catch those games on the online video stream of the Beloit Trojan Channel at ncksports.com. Also, St. John's, Tipton, Sylvan Lucas, and Sylvan Grove in a triangular today. Tescott is there as well. And Smith Center is at Republic County here this evening in a duel in volleyball as well. And also in girls' tennis, the NCAA league meet is at Ellsworth today. That's on the schedule for now. We'll let you know if there's any changes due to the weather for that one. Also in high school football notes tonight, again, our high school football locker room chats. We'll talk with the head coaches of St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas this evening. Those will begin around 5:10 to 5:15, so stay tuned for that tonight. Katy Country 94 and also online at katycountry94.com. If you ever miss our locker room chats, again, if you missed them last night, you can go back and listen on our locker room chat podcast at katycountry94.com as well. Again, we do have our Athlete of the Week. Congratulations to Beloit junior Branson Heiserode has been named the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. He's had a solid start to the 2021 football season for the Trojans. This past Friday night, Beloit's 38-7 win over Ellsworth. He ran for a season-best 145 yards on 20 carries with two rushing touchdowns. On defense, he added five total tackles, including two for loss and a sack, and for good measure, blocked a punt out of the end zone for a safety. Great game for him on Friday night at Ellsworth. On the season, Heiserode has run for 412 yards on 82 carries, an average of just under 5 yards a carry. He's also got four rushing touchdowns defensively, 16 total tackles, five for loss, a sack, and an interception for the 2-2 Trojans. So, again, congratulations to Branson Heiserode, our NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. We need your help in finding the Athlete of the Week. For more information, you can visit ncksports.com, and we'll announce the winners each week. You can nominate an athlete from any school sports. So that's what we have for Athlete of the Week. We also actually just this morning got the newest Kansas Volleyball Association rankings, and Heritage Christian out of Olathe has moved up to Class 3A, and they've moved up to the number 2 spot in 3A behind Smoky Valley, who's number 1. That leaves an opening for Smith Center, who's now number 1 in the Class 2A volleyball rankings. So good news for the Lady Red there. Nobody else really in our immediate areas is in the top rankings. TMP's number 9 in 3A. Phillipsburg from the MCL, number 10 in 3A.
So Beloit falls out of the rankings?
Beloit is not in the 3A rankings. Okay. It's probably because of the teams that moved up from 2A that took the spot and moved them down. I don't know.
Huh. So we don't have the full changes there with volleyball yet?
I mean, we have
classic. We had them. Yeah, we did all that. Yeah,
yeah, we did
right,
that last
yeah,
week.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So Smith Center is going to win the state title is what you're telling me.
They're in good shape, man.
Because that was a team that was staying firm, because last year it stopped them, and Smith Center had everybody back, and they had a lot, Heritage Christian had a lot coming back, and now they're going 3A. So this is the opportunity for Smith Center to get their first ever state volleyball championship.
Yeah.
Man, this is a great opportunity.
And I didn't have time to look at all the changes, you know, out of the area last week to see that Heritage Christian had moved up.
That's huge.
That's very big for Smith Center.
Huge.
Now it's about going out and doing
getting
what you're supposed to
now.
Do. Yeah.
That's awesome.
They're going to be the hunted probably, but it's about going out and doing it.
That's awesome. Don't want to put pressure on Smith Center, but I think we can go ahead and, I don't know, I'm just going to call my shot here. I think we can probably work on state volleyball play-by-play for Smith Center. I'm feeling pretty confident about their ability. As long as they stay healthy, I hope that's not the jinx or anything like that. All right, anything else local-wise?
No, I think we got it covered. I'll have those volleyball rankings posted. I just got them this morning, so they'll be posted here later this morning on ncksports.com.
Fantastic. Major League Baseball standings. The Red Sox won last night. The Mariners won 4 in a row, 9 of the last 10. The Mariners are a half game behind the Red Sox for the final spot in the wild card. The Yankees lost. The Yankees have a one-game lead over Boston. There's four games to play. Boy, it's getting interesting. Seattle's three games left, and the Blue Jays are still not out of it. They're a game out. So you've got four teams vying for two spots, all within a game or two of each other in crunch time down the stretch in the wild card standings. In the American League and then the National League, the Braves are very close to wrapping up their division. They won 5 in a row, 9 in the last 10. The Cardinals finally lost, breaking their 17-game losing streak, or winning streak. The Giants, guess what? They won again. Dodgers, yep, they won again. Can we just put the Giants and Dodgers in the World Series and call it good? Can we just do that? Because those are the two best teams. Giants are 104-54, and the Dodgers are 102-56. Nobody saw the Giants having this type of season. So it looks like the Giants again still win that division, and then the Dodgers have the Cardinals in a one game at home at Dodger Stadium. Tampa Bay has clinched home field advantage throughout the American League playoffs. So Tampa Bay just reloads. You know, they do it well, a small market team, and too bad the Royals can't grab what they do. And Tampa Bay, a team that, of course, Tampa Bay hasn't won a World Series. Royals did win one back in 15. Tampa Bay was runner-up last year, and they've got a very good team again. So Tampa Bay has a chance to win 100 games, too. They have four games left, and they win two. They have 100 wins, and they're the only team in the American League has a chance at 100 wins. Milwaukee has 95 wins. San Francisco, I mentioned, 104, and the Dodgers, 102. So pretty interesting stuff. But how about this? This is crazy. The Milwaukee Brewers having a great year, man. They had their celebration after they clinched the NL Central Division Championship, and it cost them dearly as reigning NL reliever of the year, Devin Williams, is on the injured list after he had too much to drink, was drunk, and got mad and punched a wall with his pitching hand. Can you say dumb bleep? Yes. This is why alcohol is bad sometimes, people. Williams told reporters Wednesday he got too drunk during the celebration, then he got upset for some reason, and he decided to punch a wall, which I guess is better punching a wall than a person. At the same time, maybe you should punch with your non-pitching hand, but you're not thinking clearly because you're inebriated. So, yay, and that's bad for the Brewers. He is one of their best relievers in the bullpen, so that could be very costly for the Brewers in the playoffs, and man, he let his team down. That guy doesn't know how to party right, apparently.
Apparently not.
Holy cow. Andy Reid back at work yesterday as if nothing was amiss. 3 days after he was taken to the hospital with an illness and dehydration following a loss to the Chargers, Reid was released from the University of Kansas Hospital on Monday, said he feels good, back to go, back and ready to work, and so forth and so on. There are reports, though, that he had some heart issues, and that is very concerning if those reports are true. And, of course, you're thinking, of course, not only, you know, long-term but near-term as well, but you know, when Mahomes getting that long contract, you're thinking, okay, Andy could coach for another 6, 7, 8 years, maybe to the end of Mahomes' contract, into his early 70s. There's many NFL coaches that have been able to coach for a long time. Now, suddenly, you start to wonder about his health, if there's issues that he has to step down to the end of the year, or maybe after a few years, and then who would be the heir apparent? And then how does that work with Mahomes? Because him and Reid work so well together, the dynamics of all that. That's a very interesting thing to follow, and it has to be a concerning, I think, to anybody in Chiefs Kingdom. Keep an eye on that. Josh Gordon is the newest Chief, as you know, and Andy Reid talked about the newest addition to the organization.
Brent always keeps his eyes open for good players. Josh is a good player. I think we all know that. And he's worked hard on his situation and making sure it was right. He's been reinstated by the league, which I thought was an important step. And so we welcome him aboard. He'll be working on the practice squad and, you know, seeing where he's at football-wise. So nothing immediate, but we'll just see where he's at and what he can do. Take it from there.
Patrick Mahomes was asked about Josh Gordon and how or what he brings to the table.
He's a big receiver. He's going to be a guy that even if he's covered, he's not covered. You can kind of throw it up there. He can make plays. But I'm excited to get to work with him. From what I've talked to him a little bit here now, he seems like a great dude. That wants to come in and work, and so we'll see as we get out here on the practice field how he can help us as an offense.
And then how will he fit in, Patrick?
We like bringing in good football players, guys that work hard and come here and want to win football games, and so I thought it was a heck of an opportunity to bring him in here, involve him in that receiver room, and he'll have his role. I mean, he's a great football player, but I think, you know, in this offense, everybody gets a chance to make plays, and the guys love competing and love getting out there and trying to do whatever we can to win.
So we'll follow that, see how soon Josh Gordon's elevated from the practice squad to the actual roster, and we'll see what he can bring to the table. He has been suspended 6 times, most of that because of failed marijuana or taking marijuana and pot and so forth and so on, and failed drug tests, but they don't test for the marijuana anymore in the NFL, so that may help Josh Gordon in this situation. He's 30 years of age. So we'll continue to follow that. Chiefs and the Eagles coming up on Sunday, 11 a.m. pregame. Kickoff at noon. Andy Reid has a chance with a win to be the first NFL coach to have 100 wins or more with two different NFL franchises. No coach has ever done that. 140 wins with the Eagles, a Super Bowl appearance, multiple NFC title games. Of course, with the Chiefs, he's been to 3 straight AFC title games, to 2 straight Super Bowls, sitting on 99 wins, and he could get his 100th against his former organization where he coached for 14 years. That'd be Eagles coming up this Sunday, who did not look good against the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Short week for the Eagles as well, so maybe that helps the Chiefs, although the Ravens are coming off a short week, and obviously that doesn't work out for the Chiefs. So if you're close to hitting the panic button as a Chiefs fan, I'm telling you, stay away from the panic button. Don't jump off the cliff or anything like that. And in fact, never jump off a cliff. That's really not advised. Unless it's a really small thing, but then it wouldn't be a cliff, would it? Unless you've got unbelievable vertical. Never mind. Don't jump off a cliff. Bad idea. But in regards to hitting the panic button, if the Chiefs lose to the Eagles, I can understand people more into panic mode. I do get that. With the Bills on the horizon, if you lose the Eagles, you're 1-3 and the Bills come into town. So it's I hate to say it. I don't like people saying must wins, but I really feel like this is a must win on Sunday because you lose this game, you're 1-3. It's not the end of the world. There's still 13 games to play. However, you're 1-3 and the Bills come to town. There's no guarantee you're going to beat the Bills at home. We know the Chiefs have lost at home to the Chargers, and the Bills might be a better team, and the Bills are looking for payback. The Bills remind me a lot of the Chiefs in 2018, that the Chiefs got really good somewhat in a hurry. I mean, they were good the year before with Alex Smith, but they really took a step forward with Mahomes, and they got so close to getting to the Super Bowl. And then the Bills, I feel like they've been growing year in and year out with Josh Allen and his maturity, and I feel like the Bills are the Chiefs. I hope they're not the Chiefs of 2019, but last year's Bills team to me was the Chiefs of 18. Really improved, made a huge step forward, came up a little bit short in AFC title game, and now that's all about focusing on getting the Super Bowl. They're not going to be happy with just making it deep in the playoffs. The Bills' focus is get to the Super Bowl, and the Bills franchise has never won a Super Bowl, of course, 0-4. And so I think they're the biggest challenge to the Chiefs in the AFC. I've thought that all along, even though the Bills struggled in week one and lost to the Steelers. I think that's an aberration. If they played now, I'd take the Bills in a heartbeat. But the point is, they're getting better. Their quarterback continues to get better. And they're going to be looking for payback and a chance to, honestly, I'm not going to say a final nail in the coffin, but if the Chiefs lose to the Eagles, the Bills got to sit here and go, man, we got a wounded animal. We can put them away, possibly, in regards to not even have a chance at home field advantage. And that would be huge for the Bills. Can you imagine? In January, playing in the cold there in Buffalo on the turf. Oh, man, that'd be a huge advantage for the Bills and their fans. So the Chiefs, to me, really have to win this game against the Eagles. And then if they beat the Bills, that's awesome. They'd be 3-2, and then everybody's going to start saying, oh, the Chiefs are the old Chiefs. They figured it out and so forth and so on. Or even if they would beat the Eagles and lose to the Bills, I'm not going to freak out about it because the Bills are a really good team. They'd be 2-3, and then they'd have Washington and Tennessee, the Giants, three games that are winnable, although Tennessee would be tough. But, man, if they lose to Philadelphia Sunday, Dusty, they're 1-3, and all of a sudden you got to wonder about a little bit of doubt. And then going into a game against Buffalo, yeah, people are going to be jacked for Sunday night, but there's going to be a lot of people worried that the season's going to end if you lose to Buffalo, start 1-4. Not many teams go 1-4 and make the playoffs. So this is a gigantic game on Sunday.
For sure, yeah.
People just assume, Chiefs fans, that we're going to win this game, which I think we should, but you turn over four times again, or three times. The Eagles defense isn't horrible. Well, the Eagles defense wasn't good against the run the other day, but then again, the Chiefs aren't great at running the football, although they did well against the Chargers, who aren't good against the run. I think this is a trap game. I think this is a game you should be concerned about, and you shouldn't overlook a team when you've lost two in a row.
Yeah, from that aspect, this should absolutely not be a trap game. Like, you've got to get your focus back.
If this is a championship-caliber team, they automatically win Sunday.
Yeah, it's... I feel like I'm with you. It's like week four. It's hard to say must win, right?
Yeah, but it's close to it.
It's pretty darn close, yeah. You got to go out and it's a game that you're supposed to win. You got to win it.
No doubt. I hear you on that one. NFL football tonight, Thursday night football. Jaguars looking for their first win at the Bengals, who are 2-1, 7:20 on NFL Network. One of the biggest questions heading into the 2021-2022 NBA season was if the league would require players to get vaccinated against COVID-19, and we have our answer. The league will not require vaccinations for players, according to a league spokesman. National Basketball Players Association has refused to budge from its stance against mandatory shots for players. A vaccine mandate for NBA players would need an agreement with the Players Association, and the Players Association is not going to agree to that. Around 90% of the league's players are vaccinated. Unvaccinated players will be subject to a much stricter set of health and safety protocols compared to their vaccinated peers, including daily testing, which won't be required of fully vaccinated players. It should be pointed out that referees and arena staff are required to be vaccinated in order to work at NBA arenas. But the players are not because they have a union. The referees and the staff apparently don't at these stadiums. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all works because New York and San Francisco have new local COVID-19 requirements regarding vaccine requirements and would be enforced for members of the teams in those cities. So Golden State, Brooklyn, and New York, including players, unless there's an approved medical or religious exemption, that could be a problem. So what about those players? If they're not allowed to play because they're not vaccinated, they choose not to be vaccinated, they go in a situation in those cities where they say you have to be vaccinated, but the league can't force them to be vaccinated. How does that work if, let's say, Kyrie Irving, who's one that is not vaccinated, what would happen? And the NBA said yesterday, you will not get paid. You will not get paid for a game that you do not play. Kyrie Irving would lose $300,000 a game. Mm-hmm. So if he had to go to New York, of course, Brooklyn's home games, that means the only games he would play would be road games not named Golden State or New York. And he missed all the home games based on what's going on now. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money he'd lose. So either you're going to be forced to get vaccinated, and I don't mean forced as in literally forced, but in a roundabout way forced to get his money if something doesn't change. Bradley Beal yesterday talked for about a minute and a half saying, listen, I'm not vaccinated, but I had COVID. I have the antibodies. I've done the studies. They say that helps me against COVID. Why don't I get vaccinated when other people, some of you in this room have been vaccinated, and we have other people that have been vaccinated, and they got COVID a second time, or they got COVID after they got vaccinated. He said, I believe I have the antibodies to where I'm protected. You believe your vaccine is protected. So he feels like he doesn't want or should get vaccinated, and he really doesn't feel like doing it right now. Another NBA player said the other day, the more and more people tell me I have to do it and want to tell me how to live my life, the more I'm against it. He said, so that's not helping. Mm-hmm. So this is really interesting to see. But 90% of the NBA players have been vaccinated. How they handle the others, Andrew Wiggins says he doesn't want to get vaccinated. He filed for a religious exemption, did not get it. So how many games is he going to miss? How much money is he going to lose because of this? Very interesting times when it comes to sports.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, no doubt.
I see. Yeah, he was the Magic player the other day. I can't remember his name now.
Yeah, he was very, very.
It was very well thought out answer, and it was a lot like what Kyrie said, right?
Yeah. Or Bradley Beal.
Or Bradley Beal, I meant.
Yeah, that's who he was talking about.
I mixed up everybody you were talking about there, but yeah, a lot like what Beal said. But I mean, it was well thought out. He actually presented a good case instead of just saying, hey, I'm not going to do it because I don't believe in it or whatever, you know?
Right. He didn't make it
just
political.
A quick, like, I'm not doing it thing.
Yeah.
So
he explained it. No, I have no problem with that. If you can back yourself up and do the research and that's what you believe, I'm cool with it one way or the other. I get it, you know? But if you want to make it, you know, we have to make everything political. I don't think it needs to be political. It just needs to be what you think is best for you or your family or whatever the case may be. And sometimes you make the wrong call. Don't get vaccinated. Maybe you do and you have some side effects that affect you, but many people, they don't. Every person is different. Just because you have side effects doesn't mean the vaccine's horrific, because it might be really good for many, many other people. Just because you got it and it worked great and you had no problems doesn't mean it's perfect for everybody else, mm-hmm. because every single person in this world is different, as we know. I'm not going to tell anybody out there you must get vaccinated or you shouldn't get vaccinated. The only thing I tell people out there is don't get your information straight off of Facebook. You need to do research outside of Facebook, okay? And you need to talk to your local medical people. And I would talk to not just one doctor. I would talk to multiple doctors or nurses or staff or whatever. I would talk to people that have been vaccinated and say, okay, well, did you have any side effects, this or that? And, you know, how are you feeling now? I mean, how long ago did you get vaccinated? If you have questions or concerns about it, do your due diligence. That's what I would say, and everybody should. And if you do, then you can try to make the best decision for you or your family or whatever the case may be. That's my two cents.
Yeah, I think I've said this before. I trusted the decision that my doctor down in Wichita told me to make, right? Because he got me where I can stand up out of a chair again, right?
He has a track record.
I think he knows what he's doing and how to help keep me where I need to be. Yeah. So that's, I made the decision based on him and based on his PA and all the people that are helping me live my life right now to the best ability.
Just do your due diligence and try to gather as much information as you can. Hopefully it's from trustworthy sources. Brian Haney,